Good afternoon. I'd like to welcome everybody to the September 5, 2017 Chelan PUD Commission meeting. This meeting is both our business and study session, although we only have one study item today. It's an abbreviated meeting. Good to see a great crowd here. Four of our five commissioners are here. Gary Arsenault is not with us today, and all of our regular staff are here. As we always start our meeting with a Pledge of Allegiance and flag salute, I'd like to start off by introducing Jess Haig, who's going to lead us in the flag salute and a safety minute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good afternoon. You may have noticed, instead of placing my hand over my heart for the Pledge of Allegiance, I saluted the flag. As a U.S. Army combat veteran, I had the opportunity and the requirement to live a life surrounded by safety, and it always needed to be forefront in my mind. So it's something that I take seriously in a lot of the actions that I do in my personal life and work life. Whether it's training on base, live fire exercises, or daily life in a combat zone, if that safety wasn't forefront in my mind, then you never knew what was going to happen, and maybe you're not going to make it home safe. After my time in the Army, I learned to fly helicopters, and as a student pilot, emergency procedures, safety tips, those are all really drilled into your head. It's something that you really need to know. And as a matter of fact, on my very first solo flight away from the airport, I did have to perform an emergency landing, and I think the outcome would have been a lot more catastrophic had I not known what to do and when to do it. So that taught me a really valuable lesson when I was first learning how to fly helicopters. And it really, really helped me along the way to know how important it was to pay attention to those safety notices and tips that the manufacturer puts out. The helicopter I learned to fly in was certified by the FAA 25 years ago, and to this day they still send me safety notices and advisories in case I want to get in and fly again so that I can do it safely. Many of us are familiar with the term mindset. And the mindset is a set of assumptions, methods, or notations held by one or more people or groups of people that is so established that it creates a powerful incentive within these people or groups to continue to adopt or accept prior behaviors, choices, or tools. It's widely taught that there's two different types of mindsets, the first one being a fixed mindset, where people believe that their basic abilities and intelligence and talents are just fixed traits. They have what they have. They try their hardest not to mess up and just do with what they have. The second is a growth mindset, and people with this mindset understand that talents and abilities can be developed through effort, good teaching, and persistence. They don't believe that everyone is the same, but they do believe that everybody can work to become smarter. Having a growth mindset, especially when it comes to safety, will allow our organization and each of us individually to continue to develop better and safer work practices. If we become complacent or we believe that we've reached our pinnacle, then we are opening the doors for injuries or other issues to arise. It is important for us to understand and realize that safety is more than a line item to check off or a box to mark off, but it's something that's fluid, dynamic, and changing. And as we adapt to that, and as we look for ways to improve, then we can reduce injuries and we can make sure that everybody makes it home safe. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Really nice job. Thanks.
That was a great, by the way, I want to say, first and foremost, thank you for your service. And before you escape, I was going to do this before the consent agenda anyway. For those of you that are from the area, you're aware that Cashmere has a memorial out behind the Riverside Center, the 9/11 First Responders Memorial. And every September 11th at 11 a.m., there is a ceremony out there. So next Monday, there will be a ceremony honoring those who perished on 9/11. And when you saluted the flag, it got my attention. It really did. And so thank you for your service.
See, I have one question. If you had an emergency landing on your first flight, was there a second one? Thank you. Perfect. Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. I was in air earlier before I had the Pledge of Allegiance and Safety Minute in providing instructions that would have had the microphone in Jess's hands when he started. Wanted to share with people that this meeting is being recorded, and so anytime you want to provide input on any item in the agenda, which you are always welcome to do, we ask that you come forward, use the microphone that's here at the table so it can record clearly on behalf of those that aren't with us today. Also, for any of that may have your phone not in the silent position, please silence your phones if you would. And that today, I think, did include me. So glad I reminded myself. All right, commissioners, we've been presented with an agenda. There's been a recommendation from staff to move one item to the consent agenda. I believe that is item 6. Is there any disagreement with moving item 6 to the consent agenda?
No.
And also at this time, if there's anybody that wishes to have any item placed on the agenda, this is the time to make that request. No guarantees, but the commission may consider that. I don't see any rapid movement, so... That being said, we have a consent agenda that has been modified to include resolution number 6. Is there a motion for approval?
Mr. President, I move that we accept the consent agenda as presented with the addition of resolution 6.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda modified to include resolution 6. Is there any discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried. Thank you. So, next on the agenda is item 5. Resolution 5.
This is a resolution approving First Amendment to Agreement Concerning Water Rights, Certificate Number 319, and a Memorandum of Understanding related to water right allocations from Leishland and Reserve Accounting between District and the State of Washington, Department of Ecology, and authorizing execution thereof by the General Manager. Marcy is going to speak for us today. Looks like she's going to be joined by Dan Haller as well. Commissioners, I'll just remind folks that we did go over this in great detail a couple of meetings ago, and so we're doing a summarized version of this today.
Yes. Good afternoon. I'm Marcy Clement, and this is Dan Haller with Aspect Consulting, who's been assisting the district with our work regarding the Lake Chelan Reserve. Today, we're seeking your approval of the resolution regarding the Lake Chelan Water Reserve. A quick background, as you recall, we were here on August 7th and provided an update on the discussions with Ecology in the district that resulted in the proposed agreements that are in the resolution, the First Amendment to the 92 Agreement and the Memorandum of Understanding with Ecology. And as previously discussed, the two documents within the resolution provide the following outcomes that we have on the slide behind us. Additionally, we wanted to provide an update that Ecology in the district met with the county. We provided the Memorandum of Understanding and the First Amendment to the 1992 agreement to the county for their review. And the county at that time had asked for additional time, so we provided that and we moved our resolution to today. And we also met Ecology and the district had a conference call with the county on September 1st, and the county shared their general support for the two agreements, and they are here today to provide some comments as well. Mike Caputa and Hillary are here. And the last item is that September 13th, there is a Lake Chelan Watershed Planning Unit meeting that we will be in attendance at, and it's the county's meeting. And this also will be discussed, the reserve. And at this point, we'd like to answer any questions that you may have going forward.
I wonder if my fellow commissioners might want to ask the county to provide their input, and that might provide us additional questions.
So, commissioners, maybe before I can do that, and maybe it's because I have a tendency to be long-winded as a lawyer, but I just want to take this opportunity again to reiterate my thanks to Marcy and Dan and the rest of our staff team and ecology team and various stakeholders. There's been a lot of work put into this consensus agreement, and I think that I want to take just a minute and give you my perspective of why I think this is so valuable and important, and it primarily centers around the fact that I think this agreed accounting methodology that is laid out in the Memorandum of Understanding really provides the foundation to help define what's left in that Chelan Reserve as we move forward into the future and try to address water rights issues in the Chelan Basin. And I spoke with Mike earlier today, and he already knows, and I've seen the materials he's going to present to you. And I think we're aligned that this really enables the county and the ecology to go forward in the next step through their cost reimbursement program that you've heard about and begin to administer, manage, and deal with some of the water that's out there still left in this reserve bucket and move forward. But I think that those two things in conjunction really provide a platform for all the stakeholders in the basin as we move forward and address issues, to see those issues coming sufficiently in advance that we can address them in sort of a deliberate and considered way as opposed to sort of an emergent fashion, frantically as we stand at the end of the cliff. So I just want to say again my personal thanks to all of you who worked so hard on this. I really think this sets us up for a future win.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I'm going to jump in here too then, because I wanted to say thank you. I know that there was a lot of work that went into this, and it took much longer than some of us would have liked, but I can see that the outcome, with the outcome that we have and all the detail and the process, you know, the process for the accounting going forward, the identifying the boundaries, you know, all of that I can see is really important. And so I have so much more comfort now knowing where we are. We all do, because we really didn't have, the process wasn't in place. The accounting was supposed to be done. I don't know that it had been done. And so I just feel much better about the whole thing. We know what we have. We know going forward what our process is. We know what's going to be done. It's going to be allocated equitably. And so anyway, thank you so much. I know it was a bit difficult at times because it was a tough situation for the county facing the exempt well issue and that Hearst decision. So all understandable. So thank you.
Thank you.
So Mike will go ahead, but we'll probably have you back up here,
yes.
All of you, to you bet.
Definitely.
This one?
Mm-hmm. Can you help him drive there?
Help you drive. No, I'm not a good driver.
You want to stay up here?
I can. I want to make sure that I have. There you go. I apologize.
Sorry.
Well, thank you, commissioners, and I'd like to, well, for the record, Mike Caputa, I'm the director of the Chelan County Natural Resources Department. I'm here on behalf of the county and Commissioner England. We have session today as well, so he had other obligations, so I'll be messaging some things from him as well. We have a number of interests in water in Lake Chelan. Commissioner Congdon mentioned the Hearst case, which is put squarely more responsibility on counties to show more clearly water supply that's attached to building permits. And of course, as you know, the state capital budget is being held up for that very reason, looking for what is called a Hearst fix. So we're waiting to see that. We're also the lead agency for the Lake Chelan Watershed Planning Unit. We helped put together the Lake Chelan Watershed Plan. And we're likely going to be the lead organization for the coordinated cost reimbursement process, that water rights processing process that we are going to venture into with the Department of Ecology. So we have a number of interests here looking at this. And I will, again, reiterate the thanks that many people have indicated to the PUD and ecology staff for working through these issues. They're important issues. They take a long time to figure out. And so I appreciate Marcy's work and Michelle's work and Karen's work, et cetera, on this. Let me move into a couple things on our slides here. Oh, great. So just to give you an overview of some of the recent history. So as I mentioned, the county is the lead agency for the Lake Chelan Watershed Planning Unit. So that planning unit put together a watershed plan that the county and the state adopted in early 2013. So that was our first effort to look at water supply, and the availability of water supply in the 92 agreement was in this watershed plan. So we just looked at it at a high level. The following year, using some Department of Ecology funds, we put together a report that went into more detail, and this is the report that your staff reviewed. So we put that together in 2014 and submitted it to the PUD and Ecology. And so the culmination of the 3 years of work is what's before you now, is the MOU, and I think it's amendment number one to that MOU. So now there is clarity from the PUD and Ecology and information that will allow the county to work with other entities in the Lake Chelan Basin to initiate this water rights processing. So this coordinated cost reimbursement process, this is, at least in its current version, relatively new authority that the state provided within the last 5 years to partner with the Department of Ecology to process water rights. So we have a lot of experience with this. We're doing this right now in the Wenatchee Basin. We have a reserve there. It's different than the Lake Chelan Reserve, but we have a reserve there, and we're processing water rights with the Department of Ecology using this this authority. So likely the county would be the lead on an MOU with the city and the rec district and other large requesters who are in line for water rights, and we plan on getting that started this year. And in fact, we've talked with Ecology about getting together with them sometime in October. So sort of picking up where Marcy left off, right? So now we have the information that's cataloged, and embodied in the MOU. But now we have to start the process. And so there are 140, 150 people in line in Lake Chelan for water rights. And so we, like we're doing in the Wenatchee Basin, we have to determine if those, or any of those, or all of them, are still viable applications. You know, they've put in applications, they've requested a certain amount of water, but Ecology has to go through the extent and validity review like they do for everything else and figure out, you know, how much water should they allocate? Is it based on a water system plan? Is it a reasonable request, et cetera? So that of course, produces great uncertainty in terms of how far the reserve will go. There's 5,200 or so acre feet that is identified in your agreement for that purpose. We don't know how far that's going to go. And so, but this helps us start asking those questions and start figuring out, well, are these real applications? And then how far down the list do we get? Part of the consideration here is also looking at the planning horizon. So historically, the Department of Ecology would consider 20-year planning horizons. And in the Wenatchee Basin, we're working with them to look at a 50-year planning horizon. So we're thinking much longer term for securing water supply than we had in the past. And a lot of that is the result of some of the changes in Washington policy because of the Hearst case, the Swinomish case, the Foster case. There are a number of Washington Supreme Court cases that have limited Ecology's ability to provide water and to mitigate for that water. So we're looking longer term because, you know, the future does not look bright based on recent past. And then, of course, once we do this, and I think this is going to take us a couple years, frankly, to go through bullets one and two, what if the reserve is exhausted, right? Then what do we do, right? And that's a very real question, particularly if we're looking at a 50-year planning horizon. And so I think you've had some discussion about this. I think there was some of these ideas were presented in the early August presentation to you, and I think you're probably familiar with a lot of these things, but there are some tools out there. Some of them are easier, and some of them are harder, and some of them are fairly complex, and some of them may seem straightforward, but they may not be straightforward. We can do additional conservation. We could also initiate an adjudication in Lake Chelan. There's more water in claims. There's 5,500 or so acre feet in claims. There's more water there than there is in the available water for the coordinated cost reimbursement process. Of course, the maybe not the best example, but the Yakima Basin just celebrated and finished the 40th year of the Yakima Basin adjudication. I don't think it would take 40 years in Lake Chelan, but it's not an easy, simple process to go through. Another option is expanding the reserve, right? I mean, there's a finite amount of water that's allocated in your agreement. You know, if there is a way to expand that reserve, of course, there are some big policy issues to talk about how you would do that and what are the implications and really what are the trade-offs for being able to do that. So again, it's probably on par with an adjudication, a very difficult, complicated, probably a very long process to discuss. There are other options that on the surface appear a little more straightforward, a little simpler, buying some existing rights, setting up a water bank, you know, which is effectively buying and trading water rights. New storage. You know, I don't know that there are many opportunities on Lake Chelan for new storage, but you can set up new storage to offset water that would be allocated for water supply. Difficult, particularly with the federal government owning most of the land where storage might be located. But again, it's one of those things, and there may be some other ideas, too, that we just haven't thought of yet. I think as we get into this more and we understand a little bit better what the limitations are or are not, then I think we'll develop appropriate tools to respond to that. So again, we very much appreciate your staff working on these issues and getting us to this point where we can start asking some of the hard questions and really digging into how much water is there and where do we go from here.
Thank you, Mike. You got some very hard questions with no answer. Oh, Ann.
I don't have an answer. So, Mike, when you talk about adjudication, would that look at the water that is being pulled out of Lake Chelan by 60-year-old cabins on the lake, that some of them that presumably don't have a water right? Then do you look at everybody and determine if they have a water right?
Commissioner Congdon, I'm familiar with the adjudication process in general. I think you have some other folks in the room who are a lot smarter than me about some of those kinds of questions, because I have some similar questions that like yours. And I know we, you know, Dan Haller with Aspect is, you know, one of the best in the business. And I think your legal counsel too probably has some insight on that. So with all due respect, if I could defer that to somebody else, I'd prefer that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks.
So is it fair to say that currently the other than residential use, the two big users of water out of Lake Chelan are energy production and agriculture?
Yes, there's quite a bit in line for, I don't remember the exact order, but yeah, there is quite a bit of a request for irrigation.
Agricultural.
Yep. Yep. And the city of Chelan has a right in there, the Lake Chelan Reclamation District, who provides both domestic and outdoor use. They have requests in line. They're towards the end of the list. Right. So there are some important requests that are not at the top.
So if I heard the message that you delivered to us today, it was thank you for getting us to this point. This is where we're going from here.
Yes. Although we're not exactly sure where we're going, but yes. We're moving forward.
Yeah. So, but I think that reiterates the point that I was trying to make, is there's a lot of work left to do, and this is one important foundational building block to getting down that path. And certainly, I agree with Mike that there are some big, difficult questions to tackle, and hopefully this will give us some information to start tackling them with all the stakeholders there. We're certainly a stakeholder given our rights, as you know, and interests, but certainly the county and the city and the rec district and all of the builders and residents, et cetera, along with ecology. And you heard some of that from Trevor with ecology last time. So a lot of work to go.
Yeah.
One more quick question. So, Marcy, are you the person, the contact person who will be regularly meeting with, talking to ecology and making sure that we are, you know, following this process of accounting and going forward?
Yes, yes.
So it will be a regular... monitoring?
We have outlined in the MOU that it would be at a minimum annually. It may be more frequently. And then it will be a more transparent where it's on Ecology's website, so all of the public will be able to see that.
Very good.
So that was part of our goals and working together on that MOU.
And so if we wanted something more than annual checkup, we could request that and get that probably.
Yes, and I think where ecology was at, based on how things process, if there's a lot of activity going on, then we would be meeting with them more often than annually.
I think under the county's program, there'll be a lot more opportunity for review and touch point on all of that as we move along, too.
Yes.
Commissioner.
Yeah, that's a very good point. because of the Hearst case, we are looking at a real-time accounting of how water is being allocated as we issue building permits. And so I think Marcy and I will be in conversations about how your accounting process will align with the one that we're going to need for Lake Chelan, because we're setting it up for all the basins where we need to know as a building permit comes in that we debit the different reserves, because there are reserves in the Wenatchee, the Eniat, and Lake Chelan. They're all a little bit different. But we have to account for that reserve and the debits every time a building permit is issued. And that's a new thing. That's not up and running yet, but that is something that we're working on.
Yep. Oh, that's really good. And then the breakdown surface and groundwater, that's really nice to be able to get our arms around that too. Because I don't think we've known that. We haven't had that. So I don't know if you guys know, but Marcy, you worked for ecology, didn't you?
I did.
At one time. So she's got a good background on, she can see it from both sides.
Any other questions or comments from commissioners?
Nope. Just appreciate everything that everybody's done, and thank you very much.
Yep.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any public questions or inputs or comments? Well, I do want to thank you for all the hard work you've done. And normally at this time we would move on to Resolution 7, but I think there may be a desire on the part of at least one commissioner to act separately on this this item. Is that correct, Commissioner Congdon?
I think so. So, I think we should take this one separately. So, Mr. Chairman, I move acceptance by the board of a resolution approving First Amendment to Agreement Concerning Water Rights Certificate Number 319 and a memorandum of understanding related to water right allocations from Lake Chelan and reserve accounting between District and State of Washington Department of Ecology and authorizing execution thereof by the General Manager.
It's been moved. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to adopt Resolution 5 as proposed. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried. Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Before we move on, if I could just like to say this truly is a watershed moment. Pun intended. But I do want to call out by name, because this is a really big deal. So Marcy really has done a fabulous job. Karen Wiggum, Michelle Smith, Dan Haller for his work, who's really been incredibly helpful to us. And I do want to note that Department of Ecology has really worked with us collaboratively. They are an incredibly important agency to us in terms of the relationship on a whole array of issues. And being able to work through an issue like this with them and be able to come to agreements on things like transparency and how things will work. Very important. So so thanks to all the folks who put out this great effort and got us to what's a really good place.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Marcy, who do you think I would talk to for questions about water rights that either exist or don't exist for people who've been on a lake since 1927? And or people who have long-term leases with the Forest Service and pull, you know, unlimited amounts of water out of the lake. Yeah. I'm just curious if that's all going to be adjudicated.
Why don't we start that conversation with my office, Commissioner, and then we can get you additional resources as you need them.
Yep.
Yep. Marcy's looking better right now.
Yeah.
she owes me for that.
Yeah.
A cheeseburger.
Thank you for your time today.
Thank
appreciate
you.
It.
Thanks.
Thanks for coming, Mike.
Thank you, Mike. Good to see you. Dan, thank you.
All right. Resolution 7.
This is a resolution authorizing the general manager to enter into a services agreement, SA number 17-134, with Open Access Technology International Incorporated, OT, of Minneapolis, Minnesota, for energy accounting software. Greg Carrington and Ryan Roy are going to present. We do have Greg coming up because this is another important moment for us in terms of really a change in strategy. So we'd like Greg to explain the bigger picture here as to what's going on around this contract.
So I'm the setup guy. So I just wanted to give you background on the Mid-Columbia Hourly Coordination Agreement. As you may or may not be aware, that agreement was scheduled to expire on June 30th of this year. As we saw that approaching, we did execute an extension agreement, or what we call a bridge agreement, that allowed that contract to continue until December of 2018. Everybody signed the agreement with the exception of Douglas PUD. They elected to not renew their participation in hourly coordination as of June 21st of this year. They began operating independently. And then on July 31st, Grant PUD essentially gave us notice that they are going to pursue independent operations as well. So the resolution that Ryan is going to be presenting to you is the first in a series of resolutions that you'll be seeing associated with all of the work that we need to do. I think, Ryan, remind me, there's about 7,000 hours worth of work that we need to do in order to change over software and change over logic and get independent signals from power purchasers and things. Is that about right?
It's about 6,200 hours that need to be done. That's internal labor time between now and January 1st of 2019. So it's a significant project.
And so this is going to be associated with the energy accounting system. We're going to be working on the energy management system. You may or may not see a resolution on that. And then we have a short-term dispatch model that we will be bringing before you probably at the beginning of next year, or if not by the end of this year. And then a longer-term model associated with operating a two-dam system. I do expect, just so you know, that we will be reconstituting some of the things that we currently do in hourly coordination. Sometimes it's best to operate independently and then bring back all of the things that we took for granted over the last, so hourly coordination has been in existence since 1972. And so there are good things that exist in there. We plan on bringing those good things back, and we're going to be working with Douglas PUD and Grant PUD to do some of the things that we currently do. Okay, so I'm going to turn it over to Ryan.
As Greg mentioned, Ryan Roy, Energy Planning and Trading, Grant County PUD, acting as central, performs several key functions on behalf of the district. One of those functions is project and participant energy accounting. This function is a core part of the district's ability to meet its obligations to power purchasers. Because the hourly coordination bridge agreement is expiring, the district must be prepared to take this function over starting January 1st, 2019. So in order to perform the function, we need a system that will allow us to perform the energy accounting. This software purchase provides the district the capability to perform the function. The contract cost is $635,000 over a five-year period. This consists of $187,000 for the base service, payable in three payments, one when we sign the contract, one when the system is ready in development, and a final payment when it is in production. It is software as a service, so there's a $4,200 per month recurring fee, 3% yearly escalation. We have a small amount of money, $87,000 for implementation services, and then a little bit for expected change orders. This is not a process we've been performing on our behalf for better than 30 years, so we expect there to be sort of some unknowns as we work through this. It is software as a service, so the RFP process was not required, but we did look at three other vendors. We've talked to entities implementing these other software packages, and we do believe this alternative is the most cost-effective and provides us with the highest likelihood of a successful implementation. The district has successfully implemented several other business-critical OATI systems, and we're comfortable partnering with them to meet sort of the compressed implementation timeline of this project. We use them for electronic tagging, deal capture scheduling, and control area scheduling. So it's a vendor we're comfortable with. Several successful implementations, we think sort of they can help get us to the finish line January 1st.
So $4,500 a month?
$4,200 per month, yes.
Now, is that or not part of the $635,000?
It is part, yep.
Okay.
But that's how the $635,000 is broken down. So it's $4,200 per month over a five-year period, a 3% per year escalation. $187,000 is the implementation cost. Okay. And then some change orders.
I'm feeling better. Thank you.
Yep.
Commissioner, that doesn't necessarily mean that we wouldn't use the software beyond 5 years. It's just that's our
correct
placeholder from IT in
right
terms of our life
yeah
cycling of the cost.
Yeah, but I was a little nervous about 600,000 and then 4,200 a month over 5 years. That's a different figure. But perfect. Thank you.
And Ryan did allude to the fact that we do know other people who are implementing similar things, and we feel that this price is reasonable based on what we know mm-hmm people are paying.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay.
Thanks. Ryan, good to see you.
Good to see you as well, Commissioner Bowles.
Resolution number 8.
The resolution ratifying field work order or change order number 1-7 to contract 15-65 with K&N Electric Motors Incorporated of Spokane Valley, Washington for the Rocky Reach Dam Powerhouse Bridge Cranes refurbishment. George Velasquez, Brett Pickford will be presenting today.
George Velasquez, Rocky Reach Lake Chelan EPMD team manager.
Brett Pickford, Director of Engineering and Project Management.
EPMD team?
Is that Engineering and Project Management.
Okay, good. Just
yeah.
It went so fast.
Yeah. So, once again, we're here to seek ratification of field work orders 1-7 for bid number 1565, and that was for the Rocky Reach Dam Powerhouse Bridge Crane refurbishment, which was awarded to K&N out of Spokane, Washington. If you recall, Powerhouse at Rocky Reach contains two bridge cranes. Each one of those bridge cranes was installed during initial dam installation construction back in 1955, roughly. Each one contains one 250-ton crane that we utilize for most of our heavy picks. And it also contains, each one of these cranes also contains one 25-ton auxiliary hook. The scope of this work was originally to repair the 25, or completely replace the 25-ton auxiliary hoists and refurbish the 250-ton bridge crane hoists. Happy to say and report that disassembly began on August 28th. K&N showed up on site with equipment, labor, manpower, and some of the equipment they were going to refurbish the existing systems with. And it's still on schedule. Hasn't gone that far, but it's still on schedule. And we're looking to complete the work December of 2017. Field work orders 1-7. 1, 3, and 5 were all due to milestone date changes. And these changes to the milestone schedule in the contract only did that. It just moved the schedule, but no dollars were awarded for those changes. A couple of things happened in the midst of the design for these bridge crane refurbishment work. C8, we found additional issues, which allowed us to gave us more time to design and procure additional parts and pieces that we needed to get C8 back up and running with. So those allocated some time for us. Field work order number two, main hoist reducers was the majority of that work. that included developing alternative trolley design concepts that basically replaced the existing main hoist reducers. Rather than replacing them, you can run into a lot of issues if you replace certain parts and certain reducers, as opposed to changing them all out. They all wear together, so it was a better idea, less risk, better option for us to replace them all. Field work order number four increased the bus electrical bus system on the cranes. What we had originally spec'd out was a 400 amp system. And during final design and detailed design, it was determined that the 400 amps would not service that load for that new equipment. So we had to upsize that that bus to 800 amp bus system. Field work order number six. This included modifications to the cab controllers. Basically, the consoles were upgraded. Additional things that were included in that were crane ladder access. Instead of hatches, we used platforms to make the system much safer for operation and maintenance. Field work order number seven, that includes additional work for sandblasting the existing lead paint on the existing two bridge crane trolley structures that sit on top of the crane. These systems currently have lead paint, and we're going to remove that. Additionally, there's a huge benefit to sandblasting these structures. It will allow us to do further testing to ensure there are no cracks that have propagated through non-destructive testing methods. Total for field work orders number one through seven is $468,599.82. And just a note to make, through analysis, it shows that refurbishing, including field work orders one through seven, is still more the preferred option and most cost benefit to the district than new cranes. Any questions? Anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, so I'm going to cover the lessons learned for this project. So as you can see, some pretty significant costs for some extra items. So as Director of Engineering, I need to take the responsibility to how do we evaluate these things, and how do we make sure that the prices that we're paying are appropriate? How do we make sure that the extra work that we're doing is appropriate? And so we've got two more significant cranes that we need to do refurbishment work on, and they're at Powerhouse 2. And with that upcoming refurbishment, we've slated that those two cranes are going to get refurbished. We're proposing not to replace them with new, again, because we think the cost is not justified to replace them in their entirety. So our lessons learned from this project, we're going to be applying towards that project. Those projects will be in the capital budget for next year. So a couple things that we're doing. One is we're putting together some risk tables on what are the items that we're not refurbishing. So in this case, what we didn't propose to refurbish was the main hoist reducers. We've learned from that when you start to try to get gears to mesh, that some are new, some are old, you can run into issues with that. So we'll be reviewing that. We'll also be looking more at safety and access on these cranes. So their original components, most all of them just have ladders that you have to climb up to and push up a hatch to try to climb up to get access and do work. We'll be reviewing those things up front. So a lot of these things are justified, but we feel a lot better if we can get them included in the scope, because then we can get competitive pricing for them. These are negotiated, so there's always the concern, did we get the best price possible? So we're going to develop our risk tables on reuse versus new components up front. We'll be trying to get the scope better defined. So with this, we had some, another area was this operator cab. So now that we've got some better ideas of what operator cabs look like, we can meet with our personnel up front and get that scope defined better. On this case, they looked at the proposed designs and said, wow, it'd be a lot better if we had this here and that here, and we can reach, and we do this function more than other functions, so we want to move that around here. So we've got that input now, and so we can better scope that as we go forward.
So that kind of answered my question, but so I've read on these, quite often it says not anticipated, but within the scope of the contract. So that, so my question was going to be, when you say not within the scope, does that mean not within, no, within, but is within, I'm sorry, but is within the scope of the contract? That means that generally within the dollar amount that you anticipated, it falls within that. Although what you're saying is you're trying to clarify that, get closer to the scope. So you're trying to identify everything so that the dollar amount, the budgeted amount, is accurate.
So do you want me to take that?
Sure.
So Commissioner, the statement within the scope means, frankly, it's a legal requirement. We can't, as you know, we're required to competitively procure these types of projects. And so when we evaluate changes in the original underlying contract, the field work order change order process, we have to be sure that whatever the requested change, and it, in most cases is something being added, is still within the scope of the project, crane repair, for example. Because
so,
if it's...
So, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, please.
In terms of... this is what we see needs to be done, and this is how we're going to approach it. We need to do generally this.
Correct.
To fix it.
Correct. Because if it's not within that overall scope, then it would constitute a new project, and we would have to go out and competitively procure that new project. So it's a checkpoint for the team when they evaluate the work to say, yeah, this is something that falls within the umbrella of the of the project we have, and that's our documentation, having it in there.
That's helpful. I just have read this, you know, 100 times,
yep.
and I've never really known exactly what that means. So, but I assume that's kind of what it was.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Additional questions?
I just had one simple question, just a curiosity on my part. When you sandblast that lead paint and you're on top of that deck, what do you have to do to contain that? Or is there anything, any requirements or...
Yeah, so what we did with this project is we decided that we would move out these structures and put them into a sandblast and paint building so that that could be contained and we wouldn't contaminate the powerhouse.
See.
And wear lots of masks.
The folks that are working on it, yeah.
So you're a week into this project at this point.
Into the construction phase.
Right. I'm just curious on the identification of these items that weren't anticipated. What drew your, was it the contractor that drew your attention to it, or we identified it in conjunction with the contractor? How did you identify these changes?
Some of these changes came about during final design of the system. Yeah, we're a week into it, but we're very comfortable that a lot of the what-ifs have been caught during the design. Now, it's one of those issues with used equipment that you're refurbishing. Sometimes you don't know what you're getting into, so there's always a potential for additional things that we have to repair or fix or replace. But yeah, most of these were identified during the final design before the contractor showed up on site during the investigation and design phase.
Yeah, so for one particular instance with the 400 amp volt bus change, that's number four, increase of conductor size. So the contractor went through and did the final design, submitted it to us for review, and our folks identified, well, we identified a 400 amp bus, but it looks like all the loads add up to be greater than that. What do we want to do? So it wasn't in the contractor's scope to do anything more than what the contract said, but we evaluated that we didn't want to have any limitations on using that equipment. So we did the research on what bus size we should have, then negotiated with the contractor, and then having them upsize it.
So out of curiosity, how many amps is it now?
Oh, we're going to 800.
Okay.
Your power is cheap.
Our load requirement's close to 600, but the conventional sizes that they make, that's the next natural step is the 800.
Any additional questions? Any questions? questions from any member of the audience. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, commissioners, we have resolutions number 7 and number 8. What is your wish?
I move to approve resolutions 7 and 8. Do I need to get into any more detail than
that? That's it.
A second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve resolutions 7 and 8. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried. Thank you all. Item 9, B1, B4, risk assessment.
We're going to invite Brett and Dan Garrison to come up. Just a reminder, particularly for Commissioner McKenna, last December we decided that the economic supported refurbishment of the B1 through 4 units, but we said we've got some concerns about safety in particular, and we want to do a risk assessment to make sure that we're comfortable that we can manage this, given all the other work that's going on out there, and this is a really big project, in a way that that we're confident can be handled safely. So the team has been working on that risk assessment, and they're here to report on it today. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. Brett Bickford, Director of Engineering and Project Management.
Dan Garrison, Director of Hydro Operations.
The purpose of today's meeting is to present the risk assessment that we promised back at the time of award for B1 to B4. And this risk assessment is really focused on this three-unit simultaneous modernization. At that time, we identified two off-ramps. One was in the summer 2017, and the next one is in spring of 2018. Also, we want to talk about authorization. We'll be seeking approval to hire two additional operators, which is one of the items identified in our risk assessment, one of the keys to being successful in this. So background information. Some of the benefits of this project are so that we can return B1 to B4 to service prior to the 2020 HCP check-in. We feel that's very important because with these units, with new runners and their new condition, then that will give us the best opportunity to have the most successful HCP tests, and this will be representative of how we're going to be operating for the next 10 years. So that's important to us to get these done. Also, it allows us to get B5 to B8 completed sooner. Also, it reduces our resource impacts. We're projecting that Powerhouse 2 work will need to start in about 2021. And if we drag out the work at Powerhouse 1, then internally we've got this huge resource that we've got tied up on that project. Then we'll need to get additional resources for the other. This way we're hoping to be able to transition those folks from one project to the other. Some of the other monetary benefits from this is that we saw bidders, particularly when we awarded to, were offering lower contract prices, being able to work on more than one unit at a time, and that was about a $2 million reduction for this alternative. We also get less downtime, so we can recover some forecasted lost revenue of about $1.9 million, and then also Andritz offered a savings to award in 2016 for this option. So you sum up those benefits, and we were looking at about a $6 million monetary value for going forward with a multi-unit outage. We also identified during that bid evaluation of these three units out at a time that there was going to be some additional costs and some additional risks. That started off with, to have three units unwatered so they could be worked on, we would need additional head gates, stop logs, and pumps. So we did some estimating on what that cost would be at about $2.85 million. To be able to run three sets of pumps at the same time, we knew we needed to do electrical work that might cost up to $300,000. When we have multiple units out, it can take additional engineering resources to solve issues that come up. You take something apart, you find more work needs to be done on it. And with the contracts that we have, where the contractor is obligated to complete within a certain time, well, the district's obligated to provide answers within a certain time. So we forecasted we might need some additional contracted resources. Also, we looked at our CM wireman crew availability, and again, with this number of units, we thought that there might be that they need to have some support as well through contracted electrical folks, and so we budgeted about $500,000 for that. And then lastly, we need operation support so they can monitor the electrical systems, the pumps, the They can issue clearances. They can do inspections and tests of our equipment, like cranes and so forth, as they're being utilized, do more routine maintenance as required. And so we budgeted about 1.8 for that. So our gross costs totaled about 5.8. So monetarily, pretty close. But because of the benefits of the HCP check-in, getting done early, staffing resources, we thought it still made sense to go ahead, award the contract, and then get into doing our risk assessment and working on how to manage that. So we hired a consultant to come in and facilitate this so there wouldn't be any biases between whatever group that was conducting that. That consultant went through and had interviews with, we hope we got in touch with everyone at Rock Island through the operations management folks, the plant craft staff, central maintenance crafts, engineering project management. We even talked with the contractor. And so 33 different large independent risks were identified. Those were grouped into different categories. Safety, unit and watering, reuse of existing components, site utilization, plant equipment reliability, and workforce availability. And so from that, we developed this Excel spreadsheet, which contains our 33 risks. Through that, we identified activities for all those risks. We identified who was responsible to make those happen. We put dates, and then we're giving status updates to management to make sure we work through those. This is a project in itself, just managing these risks. But again, if we can't achieve what we need to with this, then this signals that we need to be putting on the right turn signal and heading off to do a different project. A different attack of how we're going to have units out at the same time. So kind of a cost review. I outlined what we thought things would cost back when we made an award that totaled about $6 million. And so now we can give you a status of where we're at. So with dewatering equipment, the contract obligated the district to buy some equipment, Andritz to buy some of the same equipment. What we've done is worked with Andritz to say, let's divide and conquer. You guys take the head gates. We'll take the stop logs on dewatering pumps. The district has gone out to bid, and we have contracts now for stop logs. We have contracts for pumps. We're buying them on the behalf of Andritz. So we've executed those field work orders. So we know these costs are pretty good. We're about $1.28 million for that. Andritz, in their pricing, they were going to buy just one set of head gates. They're going to go ahead and procure ours as well. That saved both Andritz and the district time and money. We didn't both have to do designs and try to make them compatible. We designed what we're getting on their behalf. They're designing what they're getting. And so it's saving time and money. So we see some cost reduction. Our crews are working on the unwatering system currently now. We've got the design done. We've got the parts bought. And so we know the cost is going to be about $150. We don't know yet contracted craft support. That's part of the process we're working through this year is to figure out and prioritize the projects that crafts have for next year. And so we're still holding that full amount of budget. Additional electrical feeds, that work is underway, and we know that cost is under what we estimated. We're holding our contracted engineering amount at the same. Plant operators, we've done some a reevaluation of what we think we need, and so that's looking at making the recommendation for two operators, and so our costs in there are about the same. We're holding our budget for repair of existing components, so as we take them out, we find that there's something wrong. We're holding some money available to do that work. In our risk assessment, we identified two areas that we hadn't put any money or thought into, which we have now. And so that was what's the capability, reliability of our cranes, our HVAC ventilation system, our sewer and waters. And so we're working on those now, and we've got some cost estimates for that, about $275. We're also looking at plant craft support. We don't think we need to hire additional folks, but we do think that there's going to be extra work inspecting equipment, working on elevators, working on sewer systems, water systems, making repairs that come up that might need to be done off shift and things like that. So we're targeting about $100,000 for overtime as opposed to trying to hire new personnel. So when you tally up the costs, it looks like we're pretty close to what our estimate is and just a little bit under that. Again, so we're looking to, we're recommending to keep going forward.
Brett, can I Can you go back?
Yeah.
Please. The plan operator is one shift. That's two people. Is that?
I'll let Dan speak. There's more than that on a shift, but that looks like our recommendation is two to help supplement what we have. Please.
We'll get into greater detail of that in the next couple of slides. So similar to what Brett's already shared, we recognize that with this amount of work coming into Powerhouse 1, we are concerned about being able to staff it and stay on top of all the problems that may arise along the way. The fundamental issue that I have with Powerhouse or the staffing of operators at Rock Island is we have two five-letter shifts. So that provides us the ability to staff Rock Island Dam with two people every hour of the year. And it takes five people per shift per to do that. So we have 10 operators at Rock Island, and that gets us our 24/7 coverage with two people. Some days, like during the day, we have more, but at nights and weekends, it's almost always just two people on shift. Well, this project, we are anticipating that there will be nearly around-the-clock work in Powerhouse 1. So the issue I have is with only two people at Rock Island 1, one of them, the chief, is in the control room, and he needs to stay there. The other, the second person that we have on shift, he has to split his time between Powerhouse 1 and Powerhouse 2. And we don't think now that we're going to be working nearly around the clock for the next year and a half or so. We need a dedicated person in the powerhouse to carry us through this project. So that's our fundamental argument for getting additional staffing through the duration of the B1 through 4 project. Yes.
Can I jump in? So do you mean a dedicated person in Powerhouse 1 and a dedicated person in Powerhouse 2? So he's not, you don't have one going back and forth.
The people that we would hire specifically for this would be dedicated to Powerhouse 1. The person we already have, or the two people, they would just continue their normal duties. Okay. Yeah. So they would be in Powerhouse 1 perhaps when needed, but also in Powerhouse 2.
Okay.
Yeah. Any other questions on operators? Did I get to your question?
Well, I was looking at the amount of money, so that helps me understand the scope of that. It's larger than just two people, but so talk to me a little bit about as the project ends and you've added two additional people.
Let's go to the next slide. Yeah,
do you have that already in there?
Well, yes, we do.
Okay, I'll wait.
So, yes, we are currently hiring for our own succession. If B1 through 4 weren't happening, we'd still be hiring four operators right now. We have enough people that have submitted their intent to retire, and due to training and qualification requirements, we need to get them queued up quickly. This proposal will be to hire two more on top of the four that we're hiring now for a total of six. And that will carry us through the B1 through 4 project, we believe, quite well. Now, when the B1 through 4 project is over in approximately December 2019-ish, we will have a few extra operators. Not all the retirements that we're planning for will have occurred by then. And so in the worst case, I'm expecting one additional operator to remain until about 2024, and the other ones are filtering out to fill these retirement positions prior to that. So, and I say the worst case because that is just looking at retirements due to age and years of service. There are other reasons why people either choose to retire or leave the district. So there's promotions, there's things like that. So there are other reasons that people may leave. So that's why I'm comfortable saying at 2024, all of these people will have attritioned into our normal staffing.
That was my question.
Okay, good. So we covered that. There we go.
So in conclusion, we think we've met our objectives for the summer of 2017, so we've passed that off-ramp. We've identified risks. We still have lots of things to do. There were still a lot of completes that we need to hit on that. We're working closely with the contractor this fall. We're actually inviting their management to come to speak with ours on their plan for how they're going to staff the project, how they're going to utilize the site, how we can make sure things are working safe, how we want to monitor the progress of the project to make sure that both parties are successful, et cetera. So our costs are looking good so far. The design, they are on schedule with designing the new components. We've actually already cast a new runner hub and blades. We've got some folks going to inspect that in the next couple of weeks. And so things are progressing on schedule. And so, again, we'd like to help fulfill the risks that we've identified. If we could hire those two additional operators, that would help us meet our objectives. And then we'd like to come back in the spring and give you an update. So why is it spring? Is then we will know a lot more about the components that we've manufactured, what their schedule for delivery is. We should have our head gates, stop logs, and pumps all on site. And we can hopefully report that they're all working as designed and intended, and we're ready to endeavor to start construction.
Question?
Must feel good to get to this point.
Yep, still, we're at a little plateau. We got to keep going.
So tell me again, in the spring of 2018, what could trigger you to go to an off-ramp?
One, if we identify that the new stop log pumping system that we have either doesn't fit, doesn't work, doesn't provide the reliability that we want. Also working with our contractor, Andres, if we haven't seen from them that they've got staffing, site utilization, that we think that we can, you know, have enough space to safely work with just one unit out. And now we've kind of got 1.5 or 2 units out in the powerhouse. It's very congested and crowded. And so we need to work on different practices and procedures to make sure that we can work long durations of time, work efficiently, work safely. And so those are still things that we're working on.
I think just to add to that, we do have units B5 and B8 that aren't as reliable as we would like them to be. So if we had additional problems beyond what we're seeing now, that would cause us to return to the table and reconsider our schedules.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Manager items.
I just have one. So some good news. Earlier this summer, I described for you that there was some legislation pending in California that was going to change the renewable portfolio standard from a 50% by 2030 to a 50% by 2025, a 60% by 2030, and then add that the remaining resources had to be zero emissions, so 40% zero emissions resources that didn't meet the renewables qualification. And then the definition of that, in effect, excluded Northwest Hydro. So we were very concerned about that. Put together a contract with the consulting firm E3 to describe the benefits of Northwest Hydro broadly, the Bonneville, BC Hydro, and other hydro from the Northwest that's currently benefiting California, as well as the potential for other transactions that could take place in the future to help deal with the solar surplus down there, and then made a visit down there in August. So good news as of, and I should add one other thing. We, from the first visit, we learned how important the IBEW was. And thanks to Commissioner Arsenault, we made a connection to Matt Heppner, who lives in East Wenatchee and is the Olympia representative for IBEW. And he also made some contribution in terms of talking to his IBEW connections in California, explaining how this would not be helpful to the IBEW in the Northwest. So last, just before we went down there, that provision was taken out of the bill, but what we were told was it was unclear whether it was going to come back or not. And last Friday was the markup of the bill, and that provision was not included. And the sponsor of the bill indicated that no further amendments will be allowed on the bill. So we believe that, at least it appears, no legislative process is over till it's over, as you all well know. But it appears that the thing that we were most concerned about has been addressed, and so we're feeling good about the fact that it gave us an opportunity, first of all, to explain the importance of Northwest Hydro to California. It also helped us to understand better how Northwest Hydro is being used in California by these community choice aggregators, including some of our own product. And it gave us the opportunity to be able to meet with a whole bunch of folks and put a face to Northwest Hydro that create avenues for us to be able to communicate in the future as well. So feel good about that outcome, and then we'll see whether the bill actually goes forward, gets passed, and gets signed by the governor or not.
Steve, what specifically came out of the bill that is helpful to us?
There was a provision that, in effect, excluded Northwest Hydro from counting towards the 40% zero emission resources that are required. So would have made it extraordinarily difficult, if not impossible.
So it's not renewable, but it is part of it's zero emissions.
As long as there's the 40% zero emissions and it's technology neutral, therefore Northwest Hydro can count towards meeting that target, then we're fine.
Good.
So we're...
Can't believe they wouldn't have allowed it to count as zero emissions.
There's a lot you can't believe.
Yeah, I know.
Right. So that's it for manager items.
All right.
Good one.
Okay. I saw Lisa in here. There she is. Before we go to commission items, I saw you patiently waiting. Why don't we do commission travel first, and that way we don't have to hold you up.
Thanks. All right. Hey, I'm Lisa Sanders, admin in finance. I don't believe anything's really changed from last time. Do you want me to go through each event, or would you rather ask questions or let me know if you have any changes?
Maybe give us about 1 or 2 minutes to look over this and maybe then ask questions.
Okay. Commissioner Smith, I just had one question from you about if you want hotel for the night of the 17th or 18th of October.
The night before the meeting, and I'm not looking at my calendar, I'm not sure which day the meeting is.
I show right here it's Wednesday the 18th.
The meeting is Wednesday?
Mm-hmm. Wednesday the 18th.
I want to go over Tuesday night then, which is the 17th.
Okay.
Yeah. And the... Northwest. Is that I can't remember how long a meeting that is.
October the 27th and 8th.
And what time does it start on the 20th? Yeah, that one I may modify just depending on what the start time is. I may need one less night. I'm not sure.
Okay.
I think it used to start noonish to give people.
Yeah,
because
I could drive down. Yeah, so that.
But I'm not sure if they've changed that.
So I'll check back on that.
Okay.
There was a moment in time.
Will you let us all know?
Where
does that?
I'll let Teresa know. Is there a moment in time that we had the wrong dates for the annual conference in December and we changed them?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Because I thought one of my calendars I think still has both of them on there, so that's good to know.
Oh yeah.
I have too many calendars sometimes.
Yeah, I think it was posted incorrectly on the website initially.
It showed up as a week later, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. Okay. Commissioners, any other questions?
So I was just looking here. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
I think I'm probably a go for November. You can erase the question mark. November Waputa.
November Waputa?
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
So, Lisa, can we look at the 27th and 28th? Yep. So,
of October?
Yeah. Thank you. So does that mean that I'm registered and things are setting up?
That means I have rooms for everyone. I haven't seen registrations.
Okay.
Forms yet, unless.
Okay, I think does that come from Carla Martinez at Energy Northwest?
I'm not sure.
Okay, because I've registered through them for the conference.
Oh, you have?
Yeah.
Okay. And
I know I have not registered at all.
Okay.
So, and I think it's Carla Martinez does the coordination on that.
Might need to check with her.
Yeah. I'll do that.
Looks like four of us are going to go.
Three, maybe?
Three. Yeah. Okay. Super.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, commissioners, I skipped over commission items, anticipating that you would all create a long list of items that would take us for another half an hour.
How about one brief one?
I have one brief one, but go ahead, Dennis.
Again, coming back to the meeting in Douglas for a silent auction to develop a charitable fund. They're looking for some kind of a contribution from each PUD commission. So I'm proposing that I could go out and pick up a case of, you know, mixed wine, about $25, $30 a commissioner that we could put into the auction.
We really want to do wine?
Washington wine.
Pardon me?
There's several cases.
How about apples? Pears? No?
Not sexy enough. But.
Oh.
What wine has schnapps?
Let me know what you want to do.
It's fine with me.
I like the wine idea.
Okay.
I think it's the right audience.
We can wine shop pretty reasonably. And we will do Washington wine for sure.
Probably North Central Washington.
Gonna try and narrow that down. It's hard to get local growers to get $10 a bottle. But
You bet.
Okay. And then Mike just left, but I think he's working with senior staff.
Yeah, we'll talk with you about that.
All right. Thank you.
Hey, any other commission items? Go ahead.
I just wanted to react to what you shared about the California news, because I remember what it's like to invest so much time legislatively, and then it's just done, and there's no hoopla or anything. So I just wanted to say thank you for all your work on that.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big deal.
Yeah, and thanks to PGP. Yeah. PGP was really helpful. Including helping us hire a California lobbyist for 3 months. That made a big difference in terms of helping us get around, but then being able to keep track of what's going on. So we're getting a lot of value out of that organization, participation in that organization.
Is PGP regional, or is it?
It's a public generated pool, so it is just the Northwest.
Oh, it is the
Northwest Publics.
Yeah. Okay.
Pretty much Washington. We have Eugene Water and Electric Board, but all the rest are Washington utilities.
Now that's been problematic. It's a great step.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I've got one commission item. Just a reminder that 2 weeks from today, we have our board workshop, and Teresa has sent out copies of old agendas. I'd like to suggest maybe you send out our minutes of our last meeting to everybody. So just to refresh our memory, what was on the agenda, what we did, and provide input into her. And I'll be working with her to build the agenda. I will say that for everybody's information that Steve McKenna has agreed to be the board's executive sponsor to the evaluation of what should we do or will we do or can we do as it relates to paperless meetings. And he's going to be working with Kelly Boyd and others. I don't know who that will be. So. We will have that on our agenda, paperless meetings, for sure, at the workshop.
That means I'll have to use my own paper to scribble my notes.
You know, that, from what I've seen of these new tablets, if you have a stylus,
well, that's
true
too.
You've got a notepad on the screen.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway,
we can satisfy that itch.
I think there's a number of utilities now that are already there. I don't know which ones they are, but I know that there are some. So it'll be interesting to see where.
I've collected a few names if you're interested. I have them in my office.
At our workshop, we'll definitely.
Northwest. Yeah, well, I've been paperless for quite a while.
Benton does it too, I think.
And they have a really good, Energy Northwest, I thought, had a really terrific software package where, I guess you'd call it a software package, where you could move around at ease and go back and pull up any old document. And it was really super user-friendly. I liked it. I had the name of it at one time, but you'll be down there.
Yeah. Yep.
We can ask.
You bet. All right. Any other commission items? Okay. Follow up on delegation of action items.
And I realized actually I want to go back at two other items I meant to mention under manager items.
We're past that.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
2 weeks.
So I've agreed to represent National Hydropower Association at a U.S. House Energy and Commerce Subcommittee hearing on Powering America, focusing on reliability issues, and the focus of my testimony will be on the benefits of hydropower to reliability. That'll be next Tuesday. And then next Wednesday, apparently there are disbenefits to being old. I've been invited to speak to the Northwest Power and Conservation Council about what are the big issues from a West Coast standpoint that should be considered and developed and thinking about long-term electricity planning. So I'll be talking about, in particular, the work that we've been doing on least cost planning for greenhouse gas emissions and how that greenhouse gas emissions drives electricity policy more than least cost planning to meet load, the old standard that we had, and what the implications of that are in terms of particularly the importance of energy efficiency and hydropower to be able to achieve both your goals, least cost to meet load reliably and least cost to achieve greenhouse gas emissions reductions.
So you're saying your wisdom is finally being recognized?
I just say I don't get the connection to being, why the benefit of being old.
Just
I'm old and I don't have that wisdom, so.
I'm waiting.
In terms of follow-up, this is an easy one. We didn't have any action items from the last meeting. And in terms of from this meeting, I did not capture any either. So unless I missed something, we don't have anything to carry forward.
So, just my follow-up with Eric.
Yes.
Oh,
just follow-up with Eric.
There we go. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you, Teresa. Thank you.
And I did request the minutes to be sent out.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
On 7 and 8, did we actually vote on those?
Yes.
Yeah, we did. Okay.
Together. Yeah.
All right. Since I see no public left in the audience, I don't think there's any additional public comment. Any other matters to come before the commission? We already set our workshop date and place and time. Okay. Any other matters to come before the commission before we go into executive session for how long?
1 hour.
For 1 hour after a 5-minute break.
And Commissioner, the note that I handed you is because we do need to add one additional justification for executive session.
Okay.
So in addition to the one that reads at 17, we need
to... The reason for the executive session that we'll be going into is to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or is likely to become a party, and or legal risks, and to consider selection of a site or acquisition of real estate pursuant to the RCWs, all pursuant to the RCWs, for approximately 1 hour. We will take a short recess and come back in executive session.
Thank you.
We're coming back into regular session with the Chelan PUD Commission meeting. It is 3:40. No votes were taken, no decisions were made. We will take approximately a 5-minute recess and then come back into session. We're back from our recess. Is there any additional business to come before the commission today?
Yes, I have a motion that we need to make, or I will make. I want to move to change the location of the special meeting that's set to begin at 9 a.m. Tuesday, September 19th, 2017, from the CTC to District Headquarter Boardroom, 327 North Wenatchee Avenue. And then I have a second motion, and I think I can do two.
You can do them at once.
Two of them at once. And that would be to move to set a special meeting to begin at 1 p.m. Tuesday, September 19th, 2017, at the CTC, 285 Technology Center Way, for the purpose of a board workshop.
Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we set special meetings, two special meetings on the same day, one at the headquarters boardroom, starting at 9 a.m., second to be held at the CTC boardroom, starting at 1 p.m. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried. Is there any other business to come before the commission? Hearing none, we are adjourned.
Sorry for the delay. It's easier, though, if I type.